5 years ago.
Yes, sir.
Everybody had their cattle running loose in the woods, and hogs were wild, just run loose all over the woods. As soon as the school was out in the spring of the year, they had what's called marking season.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd gather all these cattle up and hogs up, and every man had marked his, and they'd help one another. If you were out here spinning yours and all, you come across a cow of mine, had a calf that wasn't marked, why, you marked it for me. And whenever you seen me, why, you told me about it, you know. And that's the way we lived back them days. And there was 5 papers right in this area here. And we had one big sugar outfit over here where we made the syrup. And usually there'd be 2 of the neighbors making the syrup. Well, 1 or 2 would be cutting the cane. We'd work for 2 or 3 weeks at a time for making syrup. At the end of every weekend, all the neighbors around come in, and the last kettle of syrup they made, they'd make candy out of part of that. You would pull candy, have candy pulling. We kind of all live together then, just like a big family.
Were you born right in this area?
I was born and raised at half a mile over here. And of course, that's kind of a new settled place. My grandfather homesteaded that, improved up on his homestead in 1876.
Is that building still over there?
That's where the old house is over there.
It's got the little shed on across the road from it now?
Yeah.
With a great big pecan tree?
Yeah.
Oh, get darn. Yeah. I'm sure it is.
He proved up on that homestead there. I've got about 72 acres of the old homestead left. That timber there in front is part of the homestead. Then back of the old house there runs in there, 38 acres back in there.
Well, as I was talking over here to Guy before I came, we were talking about things in general. He was telling me that when you were a boy that you had seen or heard Bone Mizell. And I'm just wondering, you know, I hear a lot of different things about him, and I don't know what to take from that.
Well, I don't think they could tell you much about Bone Mizell. It wasn't so, was it? He was a man that didn't matter what come up or when it come up, he always had an answer. Didn't matter what it was, he had an answer. And it was a very good answer whenever he made it. Kind of like when him and my father, they were on the federal jury in Tampa. They used to carry him to Tampa, the federal court there. And they carry him down to register deeds, you know, the case from one to another. And, well, Bone was right ahead of that. Every time he passed his house, a little old fly stove would run out, yeah, 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 yeah. Feet on him, little curly tail side. So one day they're going down, Bones reached down, caught him to the tail out of the way, reached his pocket, got his knife, done that, cut his tail off. And well, when he got back up there, they had a warrant for him. And they said, Mr. Mizell, said, we've got a warrant for you for cutting a dog's tail off. He says, Your Honor, I'm not guilty. The judge said, well, a lady said she's seen you cut the dog's tail off. Well, he says she's mistaken. Now, she said, she'd have said she's seen me cut a dog loose in his tail, why, it would have been all right. That's the kind of guy he was.
What was your father's name, Mr. Thigpen? What was your father's name?
John Franklin Thigpen.
John Franklin.
He came here from Alachua County and married my mother. She was a newcomer.
And where's that county ant, sir? The county that your father came from, where is it located?
It's just out of Gainesville.
It's outside of Gainesville?
It's the next county joining Gainesville up there. At the time he left there, Gainesville was county seat, but it was later divided like this county here. But I don't know what county it's in now.
Where did your father, where did your father's family come from, do you know?
Well, my great-grandfather, he came from Ireland over here and got a government grant out just outside, about 25 miles out in Dallas, Texas. And when the Confederate War come on, they all fought in the Confederate War. And they all fought down south here. And after the war, 10 of the boys come south here and moved to Alabama, Tennessee, Georgia, and all around. My grandfather came, the father of the South. He was the youngest one. He was only 16 years when he fought in the Confederate War. But they were originally from Ireland.
I also know that in Arcadia, they used to do a lot of wood carving. And there was a man by the name of Newberry, who I guess was a wood carver.
Yeah.
Did you ever see any of his stuff? Or?
Yeah, he was real good in a small way. Now, he carved, and the things he made was like, whittle out two horses and a carriage, and then he'd put people in it, that kind of carving he done was, little fancy carving. And, he didn't do any big carving.
Well, were there any people who did do big wood carving?
No, that's the only one I know of around that did any carving to speak of. Mm-hmm. Mr. Mm-hmm. He made livings of making little horse and wagons and little dolls and little doll houses and things like that. And that's where he made his living.
What was his first name?
I don't know what his first name. All I ever knew it was Newberry.
Yeah. Newberry, yeah. That's how I know him too. Mr. Newberry is what they tell me. Does he still have family around here?
Huh?
Does he still have family in the area?
Not that I know of. But, there was some here one time, but they all disappeared. I don't know where they went to. But mm-hmm. Where they came from here and where they went to. I can remember when Arcadia just had one general store. When you cross the river bridge there, it's where the state road camp is there now. There was a big old rambling two-story building. It must have been 60 or 80 feet wide and 120 or 150 feet long. And we called it Brown's Mercantile. And he sold everything from a straight pin up to a sawmill. Log carts, big two-mule wagons, everything in the world, all kinds of dress goods for women, everything. Anything you wanted, that was in Brown's Mercantile. I guess I was about 7 or 8 years old, the last time I remember ever we traded to Brown's Mercantile. We hadn't crossed the river to ferry then there, right where the bridge is now, the old bridge.
When did Arcadia the way it is now, when did that start to grow up? Was it after the fire?
Yeah. It's after the fire when it really started growing. Cattle and sawmilling what really was the backbone of Arcadia start with. And then of course it got diversified more in farming and different things. Yeah. And about all it is now, he'll tell you the same thing about all it is now is the agriculture around Arcadia. One or two little businesses that I factored, but not more of an agricultural town yet.
Was there anybody who ever did any blacksmithing or anything like that?
In what?
Blacksmithing. Was there a blacksmith in town?
No.
Mm-hmm. If you needed any parts like that, would you buy it from Brown's Mercantile?
Yeah. They had everything there and had a man in the back to shoot horses and all that kind of stuff. Make you a wagon wheel or...
He'd be closer to a blacksmith, I guess. Huh?
Yeah, the ferry. Mm-hmm. Or he probably could have been a blacksmith.
What about the phosphate mining on the river? How long did that last? How long did the phosphate mining on the river last?
I don't know yet exactly when that closed, but I remember when they were phosphate there. It must have been about 1910 or 11 that it quit, 9, 10, something along in there. Of course, I know just above the old bridge up there, when that 1910 storm come, the Mary Blue, that's the one that pushed them barges up and down the river then. It sunk right around that corner. I've seen that sea part of it for years there, right on the point of that river just above the bridge there. And after that, I never knew of them. Phosphate prepared them after that.
And that's why the river's so shallow right now, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All that sand washed in, they pumped it, into the river.
Huh.
I heard my father say when he come down here, the Mary Blue was 68 feet long. She draws about 6 feet of water. And she'd go up down that river pushing 2 and 3 barges.
Hmm. Yeah.
And barges was about, I guess they were around 60 or 70 feet long and about 12 feet wide. And it comes and haul that phosphate down to local ground.
You go there now, you can get a canoe across some of them sandbars sometimes. It's so shallow.
Yeah. They tell me now, up above Brownsville, up there, where the completely above where they done any phosphate, the river still carried 4 and 5 foot of water. I don't know why. I've never been down it up there. Yeah. But I've heard them say that it still carries pretty good water. There's no phosphate sand pump to wash in it.
Well, what was the train line like down here? Did the train bring in a lot of things? Was the train important in times past?
Yeah, there were 2 railroads through here. The first one was here. It was the CH&M, Charlotte, Auburn, Northern. It started up in the phosphate mines up there, Brewster and Pierce, up in there. It went to Bogle Ground. That's where they had loading docks for boats. And the ACL, it come in and it went to Fort Myers. It came over and farther in the state. CH&M, it went around the edge.
Was Arcadia pretty, what was Arcadia like in the 20s? Was it a calm town? Was it a wild town? Was it a bustling town?
It was a cow town, and they were pretty well there. They usually, whenever there was a rape case or anything like that, they always had an oak tree and a limb. Put a good rope, and they caught a fella stealing cows. Why, somehow or another, he'd just fall over there with the cows and stay there, you know, would never leave until they found him. And,
well, I heard a story once about this is the last time I'm going to ask this, but I heard a story about Bone Mizell once, and they picked him up for acquiring cattle under dubious circumstances.
Yeah.
And he said to him in court, he says, "Well, you know, I take one cow for myself, and I've done it all for, I think it was the Parkers or the Kings," and
yeah,
never said a word to me then.
Parkers and the Kings and the like, they were the big cattle men, and if somebody got stealing their cattle and their foreman around reported it, pretty soon you'd hear 2 or 3 fellas being killed out there beside a cow or two somewhere along the road. And never could pick one man. They finally convicted one man there for killing 3 out there. And They done him pretty bad to give him 10 years and pardoned him out in 3 years. Life of chattel stolen. The old boy come here from up in around Plant City somewhere. He hadn't been here for just a month or two. At least three fellas got killed. And he'd been working for life up to around Dade City up in there. Ike had the best lawyers there was in the country at that time.
Well, when you were working cattle, did you have to have somebody after a while take care of the saddles? Were there saddle makers in town? Were there people who make brands in town? I mean, how did you do it? There were, huh?
Yeah, there were a few fellas in there that made brands. And usually it was a blacksmith that shoed horses and things like that that made your brand. Then there never was so old, about 15 years ago, 20 years ago, was anybody ever made saddles till Albie Twitt there, you know, Twitt used to. They made saddles there for a while, made a few saddles. Now, around up in Hardy County, it was a saddle maker, and way back there years ago, well, the first good saddle I ever owned, Stevens made it at Fort Tula. He was a saddle maker. There was a shoe store there, and old man Dutch Marker. Now he'd make you a bridle and bridle reins and things like that for your horse, but he didn't ever make saddles that I know of. You might. Broke a stirrup leather or something, go in there, he'd repair that for you, you know. He let a little bit of old short fella. But he was good when that was good, yeah. I know. He made me first set of bridle reins, leather bridle reins I ever owned, give to me. I don't know if he and I were always good friends. He was an older man. But every time I went to town, I went to see him, you know.
And his name was Dutch Marcus?
Yeah. Called him Dutch Marcus.
Where was he at in town? Do you remember?
He was in there right about where the jewelry store is now, Reed's jewelry store. That's just above the next above the going the second opening above the street there, corner there. Goodwill's on the corner and the next is Reed's jewelry. Yeah. He was right in there. He owned that block in there.
Does he have any family here in town?
Huh?
Does he have any family that you know, Mr.
No.
Marcus?
No, he repaired and patched, you know. And
mind if I say something?
No, sure.
I had a friend of ours that are singers. Write Florida songs, and they were over to talk to Mr. Thigpen a while back, and they were asking him something about the Depression, and he was saying they didn't hardly know there was a Depression through here. And I forget what it was, something about you took care of yourself anyway or something.
We never did have much Depression here. Nobody had any money, but most everybody had all he wanted to eat, you know, and eat just about like you do today. Back during Depression time, there was over, I guess, 60% of the people who had gardens and farms a little bit, and a few cattle and a few hogs and things that away. They didn't hardly ever know it was Depression here.
I thought that was interesting because most people don't think of that. You think of the Depression as taking the whole U.S., you know?
Yeah, that's right.
It's surprising to me.
What did they come up with? They were musicians. What did they come up with?
They write historical Florida songs. You probably know Frank and Ann Thomas. They go to White Springs every year.
Sure. Yeah. They did something about Manatee that I heard the other day.
Yeah, Ann did. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I brought them to meet Roy because they research their songs and try to get them accurate. So anybody they can meet that knows anything, you know, they want to talk to them, you know, because they may not use it tomorrow, but they may use it a year or two from now.
So yeah, interesting. It builds up.
The same thing I do. I'm always, you know, trying to learn more and learn more, and pretty soon things connect.
After just a few years back, there wasn't any buildings at all in that whole area back in there where the breeze is. Up through there, clear on up, you get past the concentrating plant. There wasn't a one building between 70 and 72 back in there. Mm-hmm. That was all woods, and they opened the cattle range in there, so they put in no fence law.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I know we had that little bunch of cattle. We had cattle all back out through there. Had hogs back out through there.
You said you went camping all down Turkey Creek at different times when you were riding for cows and that out there.
Yeah.
Whenever you would spend a night, did you use anything like a metal screw that goes in the ground to attach your horse to or anything? Because I found one of them back in the woods there, and it's all rusted out. It was right next to the creek.
We never used anything like that.
You know, I'm wondering where it could have come from. You know, it's real old. It looks like it's got to be 60 years old anyway.
Yeah.
And it's just like a dog screw. It's about that long,
yeah.
Like a trailer screw. But
yeah.
It's all
rusted out.
I mean, really bad. I was rooting around back there, and I found this thing sticking out of the ground. And I undid it. It was only about that far sticking up. And I did that thing out. Man, it's old. Because I was wondering maybe somebody had put it in to attach a horse to keep it from roaming or something.
No, we used to... Most of the horses we just turned loose with a drag rope on them. And they'd just graze around there. Now, when I was cowing, I never did turn my horse loose. I always kept him tied up. Because then he'd ramble and feed all night long. Next morning he'd give out when he got on him to go ride. You had him tied up wide. I only had one horse that I had to tie. Most of them I just take my lariat, stick down four stops, run my lariat around about that high, put him in behind me and stay there. Had one though, it wouldn't stay there. Had to tie it up.
Yeah, so when you were cow hunting, I mean, let me go back on it. As I understand it, in days past, the environment has changed in Florida. So that it's not the same weather conditions, okay, and it's not the same land anymore because of that.
No, it's quite a change in the weather conditions now to what it used to be. You could put in your figure from along the first middle of June and up to along in September, everything was pretty well flooded in the woods. Everything was awful wet. And then it was kind of dry off through the winter and spring. Now then, you don't know when rainy season's coming. Now we have more rain in the wintertime than we have back in the summertime.
So when you would go, was there any time of year that you would hunt cattle?
Yeah, we usually hunt in May and June. And then usually in the fall of the year, along around September, October, then you gather out your beef cattle, that's your steers, and you move to Clusahatchee River down there, below the Clusahatchee River, and winter them down there. And next spring, while you load them on barges and send them to Cuba to be finished out.
Yeah. Well, where would you winter them down there? I mean, did you just have, just
down
let them
there,
loose?
That's cypress swamps, and it's warmer down there, and warmer temperature, and mating cane, which is good cow feed. Something on the order of Ferrara grass or something, and it was that family. And that grew up in them cypress swamps, all over them cypress swamps down there. Wintertime, them cattle gain weight like everything down there in them cypress swamps, you know. Used to, we'd gather there, and time they get them all gathered for miles around here. The last drive I went on down there, there was about 1,100 head of steers in the bunch. And drove down there and swung across the Clusahatchee River.
trying to keep it together in a river. Now, how do you keep it from trying to turn back?
Well, you cut them off in about 150 to 100 in a bunch. One man would get ahead of him, they'd follow him, and he'd wave his horse right on. These others would get on the sides and pop the cow whip and make them go in there. And he'd go on across that. He'd be a hollering or singing or something, and they'd follow him right on across. Once in a great while, they'd turn and go down the river, up the river, but most of the time they'd go right straight on across, following that man on the horse. He'd be the man that had led the bunch all the way down from there on down there, you know, 4 or 5 days on the road. And, well, they pretty well knew him in the heart, you know, and they pretty well followed him.
Did you ever have any trouble with panthers on your calves?
No.
Not at all?
No, we never did.
And wild cows are pretty good mothers, huh?
Yeah. Now, we used to have once in a while bear come in here and get at the hogs. Now, they never, hardly ever, one time in 1,000 that they ever bothered a calf, but they were kind of particularly like hogs. And I tell you, whenever a bear got into a bunch of hogs here, you might find them hogs 10 or 15 miles from there, but you wouldn't find them around there anymore.
Yeah.
They pulled out and left.
Well, just getting back to this thought, were there ever any singers? Were there any cowboys that knew songs in this area, or cowmen that knew songs? Was there anybody who would sing that was noted for that?
No, no.
Were there any, and like what they used to call cowboy poets, was there anybody like that?
Yeah.
Could recite poetry? There were?
Yeah.
Who was that?
I don't know yet who all was, just that used to be around. Used to have a bully or two in the cowboys, you know, that try to be a big man, you know, and boss everything. One time, Bonmazel and this Peterson, he was the bully of the country, and so they went started out cow hunting out. East Arcadia out there. The old man Morgan out there was plowing corn. So he rode up the fence and he said, "Now Morgan," says, "I tell you, I don't want that corn plowed that way. I want it plowed so and so." He said, "When I come back, you be sure you're plowing it that way." Old man Morgan was a little bitty fellow, huh? Yeah, man. Morgan didn't even answer him. He just turned his mule around and went on. Come back, why? Got up there pretty close. He said, "Now, Bones," he said, "don't you interfere. Don't matter what comes up and what goes." He said, "I'm going to beat the hell out of that old fella and learn him who's boss around this country." He said, "Now, don't you interfere." Bones said, "All right, sir." He said, "I won't." Well, he rode up the fence. He said, "Morgan," said, "I told you to buy corn so-and-so." He said, "I'm going to get off and beat the hell out of it." That old Morgan put his hand on top of that rail fence and sprung over. And he just come off with his saddle there. He grabbed him in the collar and knocked hell out of him. Said, "Just beat his eyes shut." And he hollered, "Put him off, Bone, put him off, Bone." Bone sat there on the horse. Got on down the road. He couldn't hardly see him. He said, "Bone, why didn't you pull him off like I told him, like I hollered to you to?" He said, "I promised you, wherever that fight went, I wouldn't interfere."
This Mizell was the biggest poet around here.
Yeah.
Didn't you say he had a sister that was funnier than he was?
Yeah, just about as witty as he was.
What was her name?
Huh?
What was the sister's name?
She was Carlton. She married Carlton, married Thad Carlton.
Carlton.
Missouri was her given name.
Missouri Carlton? Well, it was Missouri Mizell, and then it became Missouri Carlton.
Yeah. She was Bone's sister. She one had cancer down the road. wouldn't heal up, so he brought her over to Dr. Wilson over to Tampa, over in Sarasota, brought her to Tampa over there. So, you know, granulated sugar is one of the best healers in the world. And so he went to doctoring it and putting sterilizing it with Lysol water. And then he put white sugar on it. She was 91 years old then. And one morning come in there, he said, Doc said, you know, said, I just got to think. I'm an exceptional patient here. Well, he said, how is that, Donna? Well, he said, she said, I bet you I'm the only one in here that's got a sugar cure behind. Well, she takes some of Bone's wit with her. But she was just as witty when she was 93 years old, when she died in 93. She was just as witty as the average young person.
Seems to me, around here, I come from southeast Florida, mm-hmm. where I was raised. It was like here when I was a kid, and then as all tourists moved in now, and then people moved in. But the older people here have better health than they do there, overall, it seems to me. I've seen people here that's like Roy's age, and that like he looks like a man 65 down here, or even 60. I've seen people there that, you know, aren't near as good looking as, you know, as he is in his shape and all, and don't get around at all or nothing, and, you know, 60, 65. And up here I meet quite a few of the older folks that are in much better shape. And I was wondering if that's any, think has to do with just taking care of gardens and...
I got around pretty well, so I broke my leg, but that knee up and all. Mm-hmm. I get out there, I got a little garden going out there, you can see.
Yeah,
see
that. Yeah, it's a little enough.
I'm only 84.
You're young yet.
Yeah.
Well, it would also, I think, depend on the diet.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
What was like, I mean, you know, as you were, what's the average sort of thing that people would normally eat around here? I mean, what would be the kinds of foods? What sort of things would be available?
Well, when I was raised over there, my father there, he raised iced potatoes, sweet potatoes, rice. He had his own meal and grits ground. He cured his own bacon and pork, ham, and all of that stuff we cured. Made our own shortening and all. Had a milk cow and butter and in season, we always saved a lot of dried peas and whatever wasn't green peas. And we had dried peas to eat if we wanted them, or dried beans when the beans was out of season. We always had plenty of syrup and plenty of honey and plenty of brown sugar. And we could live very well with coffee, or we didn't have to have coffee, just salt. About the main thing you really had to buy.
Was salt and coffee?
Yeah. Well, of course, we drank coffee. We bought coffee and bought white sugar. But we had plenty of brown sugar, which done most of the cooking, you know. And
probably
we had our own beef.
All grains.
We had our own beef. We had iced potatoes, sweet potatoes, and all that kind of stuff.
Well, when you say that you had, let's say that when you were over at your dad's place, okay, just for an average supper, not a special day, but just an average day, what would you have? What would you eat?
Well, as a general thing, we usually have either iced potatoes or sweet potatoes on the table. Then you'd have either pork or beef for a meat. And you'd have rice. And we were great hands for cornbread. We'd eat a lot of cornbread. And then then we'd always, Mom would always make a pan of biscuits, and then we'd have syrup to eat with biscuit if we wanted to after finishing the meal, and something sweet.
You were pretty good at cast netting too, so I imagine you have fish on occasion there.
Yeah, we have fish anytime we want them, but we go down here to the lake, catch a few minutes to catch all the fish we want with cast net.
I was watching, I'll tell you after he gets through this, I was down in Immokalee last weekend and we were watching my friend Jim Billy, this Indian fellow. He was trying to learn to throw a cast net for this black man down there. That was one of the funniest things I've ever. He throws one like I throw one, where the front goes out and then the back comes out and meets it in a line and it lands and does nothing, you know. And this black guy could, he could just, like nothing, throw it and be a beautiful circle, you know. And
well,
he was getting so exasperated, it's the first time I've ever seen Jim Billy get red eyes, where he's really getting mad at himself.
Yeah.
Boy, that was funny.
Well, the thing about it is, most people try to throw a cast net. You've got to pitch it. You've got to make a pitch.
Now this fellow kept reaching under it. He'd reach under it and grab it in his hand a bunch of ways and hold it in his mouth and he'd just kind of sling it like that to the both arms.
He kind of make a pitch with his body.
And James, it looked like he did the same thing, but he always ended up doing what I do, because I can't throw one either. I've tried it.
No, I've never even tried it.
Well, it's if you try it, I guess it's a natural thing that when you try it the way you think it should go, one end goes out nice and then it stays there.
Yeah,
while
the
other side comes up and hits it,
closer.
And then it drops. And it should go out and make a big circle and just land in a big open circle. But mine never did. James sure did.
I didn't learn to pitch a cast net until I was 7 years old.
Oh, yeah. Only 7.
Dad made me one 3 feet long whenever I was 7 feet long, when I was 7 years old. Well, when I was 10 years old, he had a 4.5 foot. That's why, and after I got grown and kind of settled down and got married and all, I used a 10-foot.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot of reach there. 10-foot's a big one.
I used to go down there to Englewood, half a day catch 100 to 125 pounds of mullet.
Did you have your own smokehouse? Did you smoke your own fish in that?
Huh?
Did you smoke fish in a smokehouse?
Well, we generally smoked a few, but most of them, while we dress them right there, then bring them home and freeze them.
Uh-huh.
And,
did they smoke much meats in the older days?
Yeah, oh yeah. We always had all our pork practically was smoked, tinned pork. We didn't have any just plain salt pork on it.
Mm-hmm.
Most all of it was smoke, just cured and smoked.
Mm-hmm. Did you go out, when you were a boy, did you go out looking for frogs, gigging for frogs? No.
Still don't eat frogs.
Don't
eat alligator either.
Were there more alligators?
Huh?
Were there more alligators in the old days than there are now?
Yeah, there wasn't. About like they are now.
Not like they are now.
But you're not allowed to hunt them now, and so that's why I got my fish ponds over here, right out front down there. There's a big one there, where in that WT on that island, I left an island in the middle. And he's 8 or 9 feet long.
Mm-hmm.
That's
good. You want to eat him sometime?
No. Well, you know, in the summertime, when I was a boy, there wasn't no other way to make money. And, we used to get out there. I was a kid, I'd drive the wagon from one pond to another. Dad and another man, first one and another, they'd hunt around the edge of the pond for caves or out in there. And I'd drive the wagon up there. They got one, they'd get him, put the hide in the wagon, and home they'd go. And we'd go all over that whole woods out in there. Then out across the creek out there.
That's just right out here?
Yeah.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, right on that branch where you live, there used to be some willow ponds there.
Yeah, over there, right next to one of them.
And that used to be always get 2 or 3 gators every time you went through there.
We've had a few there in the last years, but not since we've lived there. We haven't had one anymore. We had them before that.
Which
fenced it off too much now.
Yeah, what is this all? Now, see, I never, you know, what is this about fencing in Florida? I know that this was the last state to have a fence law passed. I mean, why was that such a bad thing to do? I mean, what did that prevent?
How is that, man?
I have read that Florida was the last place to have a fencing law where you had to put up fences, you know, and you had to legally observe that. Why was that bad to do? I mean, almost every person I've talked to has said that, you know, has made the comment that it was bad to put up fences. I mean, what did the fences do that was so bad?
Well, what it done, a few big men like Brightower and that way, they had a little money, and they bought this land for 25 and 50 cents an acre from the government, and pay now a little now and a little then and yonder. And pretty quick they had most all the good grazing land fenced up, and the little man, like we were with 50 or 60 head of cattle, we was out of luck. We had to do away with our cattle.
They got the free grazing.
Yeah, free grazing was done with, you see. Huh? When I was a boy, you didn't have to own an acre of land. If you had a bunch of cows, you could graze them anywhere you wanted to, you know.
There was quite a few men that became rich that way, wasn't it? They'd start out with one or two cows, and then they'd get a calf, and then a couple more, and a few more, and pretty soon they were just springing up everywhere. I'd read about that.
Yeah. Yeah, I know one man started out with six cows, and then, well, they caught him after about 15 years, but he had about 1,000 head of cows then, and they sent him off to pen for 2 years, come back, and in 10 years' time, he had 5,000 head of cattle.
Taught him a lesson, eh?
I don't say it was dishonest, but his cattle sure didn't breed up fast.
Yeah.
The way they done that, them fellas done that to build the cattle up to pay. He lived over there. Well, he had start off with 25, 50. Well, he'd move them down around Point Gorge somewhere down there. Then he'd pick all the stray yearlings that wasn't marked going down there. Mm-hmm. Well, get down there and keep them a while. And then he'd come back up the strip up there. He'd mark the branded deed, and he'd pick up all the strays that wasn't marked, you know, through that route.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way they built up the bag.
He was just stealing everybody else's.
Yeah. They'd just take anything that wasn't marked, you know.
Yeah.
They were big enough to be weaned off a cow, you know. They'd just let it get in their bunch and move it on with them.
But mostly they was honest, right?
Yeah.
Back then. Just a few of them like that.
Yeah, there was just a few like that. Now you take the Parkers. I never heard of them letting any strays, you know. But there was six or eight of them, and they had, the old man Parker had about 150 head. Well, and then these boys grew up, and they just kept taking care of them, you know, until they built them up to the end of the thousand and number of years. Then they'd buy out a fella here and there. And after they got the no fence law in, then they bought a lot of little fellas out that had no place to go. See, they fenced up 130,000 acres, about 130,000 acres for the government. I think Hooker told me that on that 130,000 acres, they had to put up $2,000 on the buy of it.
Jeez.
To start with.
Well, that's a nice way to start, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Then they pay along a little bit. Some of them, I don't suppose they ever paid for.
Yeah. Of course, I could do that, except for the taxes. Well, what kind of if taxes are on that if you have cows on 1,000 acres?
Well, these timbermen that come in here, and they find three or four sections of good timber, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they buy it for $1 an acre, the government, for that heavy timber on.
Mm-hmm.
They cut the timber off on it, and they go back for taxes you can buy a tax deed on it for $15 or $25
mm-hmm.
on them 3 or 4 taxes. That's where a lot of fellows got started. That's where Kibler got started. It.
Mm-hmm.
When Fort G here, they bought 3 townships over there from the government. Kibler government 50 cents an acre for it. Cut timber off of it, they let it go. Well, when they had the Murphy Act, they paid to advertise it. All you had to pay for the advertising and put it back on the tax book. Well, it cost them $130 a township.
Hmm.
36,000 acres. Yeah. $130 a township. That's what it cost to advertise it.
Hmm.
Government give them a clarity to it.
Yes.
When did things start to change in Florida? I mean, was it after World War II? Was it before World War II?
It was after World War II. But
after World War II?
Yeah. It was changing after World War II, but it was several years. It really started changing about the time the Depression come on, about 1930. It really. Well, down up and down the East Coast there, it started booming down there about 1924 or 1925, and then kept on booming then up till the Depression hit it in the 1930s.
Yeah, my dad was making tomato crates down here in the 1920s, I think, in the late 1920s and early 1930s, with tomatoes all over the place.
If back in the 1930s when people were making a living, and then they started to see these changes, what did they think about? Did they did they try to stop it in any way, or did it just happen on them? And
they just let it rock in all on them, and there was no way they could stop it. The people would come in here and buy the government land, and. Well, and these fellas, they had plenty to eat, plenty to wear, but they didn't have no money to buy nothing with.
I noticed that was true in South Florida. The people that are native there complain the most about the northerners changing the place.
Yeah.
But it's their fault as much as the northerners' fault, because they didn't get in office. I mean, they didn't even try. They let the northerners get in office. And they tried. I mean, they come down and they wanted to change it to make it like New York or New Jersey. And so they tried to get an office, and there was nobody running against them.
Yeah.
And it's partly because they were working hard, but partly because nobody wanted to take the time and let George do it. And George did it to them.
Yeah.
They tried to change it like they have a watershed up around New York, and now they're down here. It's a whole different thing, and they didn't know that. And that whole place is just ruined down in Southeast.
Our government kind of run that away now.
Mm-hmm.
There's only whole United States of both nations people. There's only about 30 or 32% of them that ever vote.
Yeah.
In the whole of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Some states won't run over 25%.
Mm-hmm.
Now last year, Florida run highest of any state in the union. But they done that on the strength of this homestead exemption law.
Yeah.
And that's what made it come up. Of course, they didn't want to lose that $25,000.
Yeah.
Because so many people on that $25,000, they get by without. Well, in DeSoto County, there's 68% of the population that don't pay a dime taxes.
Oh, yeah? We pay pretty good. I've heard of that. There's some people that have houses and stuff on land, and they don't hardly pay any taxes, yet I've got a trailer and I've got 10 acres and I'm paying $300 and some a year. That's with homestead exemption.
Yeah.
I don't understand. There's other guys that have a house on 5 acres and they're not paying a dime, or maybe $60 or something, even then. You go and ask them about it and you get the runaround. I don't think the people there know why either. So we've asked and they just him and haul around, not really know.
Well, there's got to be, logically, yeah, there's got to be a reason. Sure, there's got to be a legal thing, otherwise they're against the law.
Yeah.
And if they're maintaining the law, then there must be a public access to what is happening, or just can't.
Just got to try to get hold of it.
Well, when that Thompson thing, I owned all that property over in Niagara Wilcox, you know,
oh, yeah.
All that big factory in there. I sold that to Curtis Brantley, and I sold 120 acres over there. Then I was paying $360 a year in taxes on them. Now I'm paying $1,760, and I've sold over half of it.
Hmm.
That's what the $25,000 homestead gift has done for me.
Yeah.
And the county's broke now.
Yeah, they say. But if you go down and watch them make the laws, you can see why. They don't think about it much. They just do it.
Yeah. Well, the more population you get, the more law you got to have, the more roads you got to have, more of everything you got to have. And whenever a bigger part of the people are not paying anything,
yeah.
It's going to double up on them that is paying.
Yeah.
Just like the roads over where I'm at. You seen how bad the road is in there?
Yeah.
County won't take care of that. You seen how good the dirt road is out here?
Mm-hmm.
Ed Johnson lives right over here. He's the commissioner.
right straight.
Yeah, right back down here.
Yeah, right straight. Well, right. West, south of me.
Right. And all the roads in between 72 and, what is it, 761? They're all graded with a grader. On our side, they won't do it. It says private, we can't touch it yet. We're paying taxes for roads. And we've already been complaining about it, and we got some jerk over there that keeps getting out there with his tractor, and he keeps trying to do it, and he's pushing all the shell into the ditches.
So the water's not going to run right.
Well, we're going to end up with mud instead of roads, because he don't know how to do it, and we need a man in there with a grader, not no tractor. You know, your tractor can't do it. You need a grader, and you need it done right. And hey, we're paying taxes, why aren't we getting it? We've been complaining and complaining. The number one man that's against it is Ed Johnston, and they're saving money for some other place. So I'm a friend of his young wife. We live near each other down in Broward County.
But the way that was drawn out, that subdivision was drawn out.
That was Turner's,
right? That was supposed to be a private, and when Garner was county commissioner, that's when they drawed up that deal. And they never seen that the man hard service, he's supposed to hard service all them streets in there, and all of that, and the county would accept it, would buy it, and keep it up. But they let him get by, and now the other commissioners, they can't buy it now because it's not according to that contract.
No, I can agree with all that, but when we went in, the last time we had a big meeting down there, we got just a straight political BS right around. Well, I mean, it was so ridiculous, it was funny, and this road committee they have is so stupid over there, that they said, let this lawyer do all the talking, just be there to back him up, and don't say nothing, don't ask questions. Well, his lawyer's a drunk, we found out later, who had volunteered his services, and he just told them the problem and sat back and let them say what they wanted. Well, they were saying, well, you're paid $16,000 a year for your road taxes, and it needs more than that, and you've been paying that. Well, heck, we've been doing that for years, and we ain't got anything for it.
Yeah.
And all we asked for was 3 miles of that, three main roads to be shelled and graded, you know, kept up. Not all of the roads. There's like 20 miles of roads in there.
Yeah.
Just 3 miles of it so that in the main areas, so that fire can get in there, because we got supposedly fire protection, which we don't. We're paying for it, but we don't. And they can't get in there. The police, I've seen a police car in there, I bet, 7 times in 3.5 years, because they don't want to go on them roads. The mailman don't like it.
If they're going to collect taxes for you, they ought to keep your roads down.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. But they didn't even want to do them 3 miles. They're trying to get out of all of it. And so I'm going to say, well, what happened to all this $16,000 before? Give us that back. We can hire a man to do 3 miles for a lot less than that. We'll be set for years. But no, you know, you're not supposed to say nothing. And then later we found out this guy was a drunk, and it's politics going on over there, you know.
Yeah.
And them people ain't even in it. So I'm going to try to get hold of Ed Johnson myself and talk to him on the side, because I got to get that jerk off the road over there with that tractor. We're not going to be able to get in and out of our place. That's the guy that lives across the road from me. Incredible what he does.
Well, you take this wonderful engineer of the county's got, he's really a Christian man. Because when he builds a road, he comes back and then puts the finishing touches on it, and he leaves it rough enough to shake the devil out of it before he gets to church.
Yeah.
Or he's... That's some engineer.
Yeah.
He come up here, started up yonder on top of the hill, and dug me down about halfway down the hill, and stopped him.
Yeah.
So I said to him, I said, "Hey, I said, you're going to turn that water loose there on me and flood it." "Oh, it's that, it'll sink its level." I said, "Yeah,
yeah.
You're darn right." I said, "I'm at the bottom down there where it's going to sink its level."
Right.
And I never did get that ditch cleaned out.
Yeah.
That's what beat Garner and just such things as that and Wayne Terry. That engineer beat both of them. Of course, he went down the hull and stopped up a bunch of them ditches down there and dug them down to they get to where they really needed the ditch, and then they stopped it.
Yeah.
Flooded two or three people out down there.
Out around here, people don't seem to realize, they don't read their plats, and they don't realize the whole area is a floodplain. And you can dig ditches from here on down to the center of the earth, and that water's still going to, whatever that water level is, that's where the water's going to sit. You can't run it off but so far. And then if they don't want water around, then they shouldn't buy out of here, because it's going to be here, unless we have a drought.
That's kind of like a widow woman. I take care of a place, and she said, "I want you to get a drag line now, and dig a canal down that side of the fence there." I said, "Well, where are you going to take the water to?" "Oh," said, "the water will run in that canal." I said, "Where is it going when it gets full?" "Oh," said, "that'll take care of it." I said, "You better get somebody else to do that, because I'm not."
Yeah.
I said, "That won't do you one dime's worth of good." I said, "They ain't got nowhere to go. It'll soon fill up, and you ain't got nothing."
Yep, got a deep hole in the water. To their neighbor that moved across from him, digging out the creek. He wanted to come over and dig out my side. I told him, "No, leave it alone. I said, you stay on my, off my side of the road too, because the county put the surveying in on that originally, and them ditches are where it's flowing now."
Yeah.
He said, "Well, it's got standing water out here, and I want to cure it." I said, "You can't cure it. It's a floodplain." I said, "Read your percolating test. It's only 18 inches, you know, and it's, them ditches are a lot lower than that." I said, "There's going to be water in there until it dries out, or it'll be there all year. Usually it's all over here." He's afraid of standing water for some reason. I mean, it's fish in it, so there's no sense worrying about it. So he went and paid for a backhoe, and he dug and he dug and he dug and he dug, and he spent several $100 on it. And we had our rain here a few months ago, and it's still standing over there. Finally give up on it. But he can't get it in his head, you know, that there's a water level and then there's your land, and it doesn't matter how much you dig there, that water level stays there. You just can't get it in your head.
Well, you know, so many people, I was on that Soil and Water Conservation Board for 32 years. And people come here from the north, and you still can't tell them this flat land that you've got to have an outlet.
Right.
They buy a piece of land, and they want to drain, won't you give the levels out there? Well, that was our job, to give the levels off. And, well, you've got to have faith and strength. Oh, that'll take care of it.
And
that's all you got out of it.
They just don't realize how much rain comes through here.
Yeah.
When it does, it floods.
They don't realize how close the top of the surface that your hard pan is here to hold your water up.
Yeah.
Well, I understood that there was a whole series of ditches throughout the southern part of the state that have been put in the last 30 years or so, just to drain off the land.
Well, there's been any number put in just to drain the land, but still, there's a lot of them that's been put in to drain the land that is not worth 2 cents.
Yeah.
Because they've got nowhere to go to. But
yeah, just little ditches around. That's all.
Yeah.
You get a lot of them, especially in South Florida, and if general development's here, then you around this area, you'll have a lot of ditches that go nowhere so they can sell waterfront property. This is not a joke, this is the truth. And all over South Florida, they were called Mackle Brothers. And they destroyed, they were one of the biggest destroyers of that part of the state. And nobody would buy from them. They changed their name to General Development and moved up here. But if you check General Development, Mr. Mackle still owns it. It'll be Mr. Mackle. And they'll dig, you're just big enough to call it a canal. It'll be a ditch just into the water, and they'll circle it around or whatever. And then they'll put their roads in and houses up, and they'll have ditches going in between them and all that, so they got waterfront property. That's the only reason they do it. And then you leave that 5 or 6 years with no fish or nothing put in there, and you got stagnant waterfront property.
Well, then they use that land that they dig out, you
right.
know, to build up that where they build their houses up.
Right. Yeah, a lot of it's just muck. Mud and muck.
I've seen
the
that whole
crack and everything down there.
I've seen that whole area down there where Fort Charlotte's at.
Yeah.
I've cow hunted in there when a horse wouldn't be out of the water.